You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Hey, you ready to rock the place out, dude?
Ultimate hype man.
He was on fire last night.
And it's all because you guys like to drink beer.
Word association before we get you out of here. Eddie Johnson.
Twister.
When will we see Simon Borg taking over Snapchat and MLS?
Do you know
what Snapchat is, since winky faces are not your thing?
No, I do, and Snapchat wanted all my contacts, and I refused to give it my contacts.
Simon, you are an idiot.
We can't prove it.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on Sirius XM FC Channel 85 and MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me on this fine Thursday or Friday, if you listen on Sirius, Matt, the armchair analyst Doyle. Thank you for joining us, Matt, all the way from San Francisco, where he hangs out with his cats all day and writes about soccer. And then Dave Goss, as always. What's up, guys?
Nothing, you know.
What are your cats' names, by the way?
Talk about soccer.
That's it? That's all you got for
Goss,
me?
Goss has been talking about the Mets for the last 3 weeks.
Broom jokes, don't care. Don't care. What are your cats' names, though? Because I see them in meetings via Skype all the time.
General So is our 9-year-old domestic short hair, and Taquito is our 1-year-old.
So you have a theme here. It's like ethnic
food.
Junk food.
Food, yeah. Yeah.
Do they not respect the fact that you're in a meeting?
No, they don't. They don't have a lot of respect. Okay. General So, she will climb right up onto. She's a big cat, and she thinks she's a small cat, so she will climb right up onto my shoulder. And Taquito's just—he's a jackass.
Yeah, there you go. The personalities of Matt Doyle's cats, what you always wanted to know about on Extra Time Radio. We've gone from jam spoons to domesticity. So let's talk about what we're going to do on the show today here. Dax McCarty in the second segment. Matt and I sat down with him for a very, very long interview on Wednesday. There's some good news for Red Bulls fans in there. I will not break it now, but let's just say you should not be too worried about this offseason with your captain. He'll explain in that segment, as well as comment on his new fiance. He's a engaged man. He's the captain of the first place team out east based on points per game, and he's a good guy. What's up?
Connor Lade just got engaged as well.
There's a run on engagements.
And apparently Dax McCarty got engaged to a twin, and Connor Lade got engaged to a twin, so he asked his captain for a little bit of guidance. Dax McCarty's. And there's an article out there about Connor Lade's engagement that I highly recommend reading if you enjoy comedy.
So if you win games, I think it all goes together. You win and good things happen for you in your personal life as well. We'll also talk U.S. men's national team. Matt has a lot of opinions. I have a lot of opinions. So does Dave. They lost big
time. I don't have any opinions.
To Brazil on Tuesday. We'll cover that one at the beginning of the mailbag. Let's start with MLS, though, guys. A big weekend ahead in the league. Playoff race is heating up. A couple games on Wednesday night. Vancouver 2-0 winners against the Colorado Rapids. Portland SKC 0-0. Both of these honestly looked like they had scoreless written all over them. Vancouver late on in this game, get a couple goals, get this thing done. Another big win for them. Portland, all they do is pitch shutouts. But I saw an interesting quote from Caleb Porter talking about why he went to Chelsea in the offseason. It's because he was trying to balance his own beliefs about how soccer would be played. You remember Porter Ball from a few years back, and effective results. Is this effective enough? Is a 0-0 draw at home the type of thing that they should be shooting for, or
no? I mean, that was a 6-point game, and granted, they played pretty well, and they didn't take the loss, but this puts them under a lot of pressure.
Sixth place in the West right now, 41 points from 28 games,
and they have, I think, a harder schedule coming in for the rest of the season than the two teams that they're really fighting against.
San Jose with a lot of home games.
And I think Seattle has a couple more home games as well.
Now, we don't want to overrate San Jose home games because they did just fall to Philly at home.
That's true. But they're going to have Anibal Godoy back for the rest of the season. I'm not going to say this was a must-win game from Portland, but a 0-0 draw against a conference rival, it wasn't a great result for them.
Disappointing for them. Vancouver continues to sit there at the top of the Western Conference. 48 points from 28 matches. They're now in the Supporters' Shield lead 1.71 points per game. That's number one as well. FC Dallas second with 1.69. You could go back and listen to our interview with Oscar Pareja from Monday. Really interesting stuff on youth development in MLS. Let's look at the weekend, though. A big game on Friday night here in New York City. Well, in Harrison, New Jersey, I should say. The Red Bulls hosting the Chicago Fire. A little teaser for you. We just sat down with Matt Polster, rookie midfielder, defender, utility man, do-it-all guy for the Fire. That will be on Monday. Dave won't be here, so we're just filling in the holes here.
Shout out to Vaz, everyone out there.
There you go.
Monday,
the Red Bulls, though, clearly the best team in the league. The Fire upward hill to get to the playoffs.
I just said
best team in the league. I just channeled my inner Simon Borg. Yeah. It's just rubbing off on me.
Let's say best team in the East.
There you go. Okay.
They do have the potential with games in hand and points.
I think they're probably the favorites to take the shield, but it's not going to be 100% easy because they have another game left at the Fire. I think they end their season at the Fire, and they never play well there. They have to go to New England. Yeah. They don't play well there. They have to go to Portland, which you can get points there, but it's a cross-country trip on turf. And I think they have to go to Orlando as well. So that's like three games on turf right in a row.
And where does the line, do you think, come when you're a team that's safe in the playoffs? And if you're a team like, let's say, New York, you're chasing, do you start looking at keeping guys ready for the playoffs and not pushing for the supporter shield?
I think it varies from team to team, but it's something that Jesse Marsh has to think of, because he cannot afford to go into the playoffs with a dragging Dax McCarty or a dragging Matt Miazga. I think pretty much everyone else has an effective replacement. You could argue about Sasha Kljestan a little bit, but those two guys in particular.
So you're a guy who's been in the past a big fan of this team. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've really gotten your viewpoint on this season and the change. What's your quick thoughts on what has happened in Red Bull land and how it's worked out this year and what the future looks like?
I mean, first of all, everybody knows we worked with Jesse last year,
yep.
And I consider him a friend. So I'm not going to be completely objective. I think he's a great guy doing a great job. I think that if you look at the structures that they have in place now, if you look at that academy that they've had running longer than any other academy in MLS, and they finally have the system to bring those guys up, and we're seeing it pay off with Lade, with Miazga, with Sean Davis. It's fun to see. I think for an American soccer fan, it should be fun to see, because this was a club that was sitting on a pile of gold and were too stupid to drill for a long time. And now they are doing all the things that you want to see a good club do. My issue goes beyond New York to Austria. It goes to their propensity for firing successful managers with seemingly for specious reasons, or at least unclear reasons. And I worry that 18 months from now, we won't be talking about Jesse Marsh and Ali Curtis. We'll be talking about the next regime. And instead of having this institutional memory and this plan to play out over 5 years, we'll have another two-year cycle. And I think that's what the town hall screaming in January was really about. It wasn't as much about Mike Pecky. It was about what are your parameters for success here? And I won't buy that from Austria until I see it actually play out over a long haul.
Well, wait and see on this one. Wait and see on their season so far, but a big game on Friday. Viernes de Football, 7 p.m. Eastern, Unimas. I'll be heading out there. Always enjoy some soccer in person. Hit me up if you're there. Moving on to Saturday, a lot of big games here. A lot of teams fighting for their playoff lives. Philadelphia taking on the Columbus Crew at 7 p.m. They start off the night. That one's on MLS Live. The Union really, really need wins going forward. I don't know that you can bet on Connor Casey to grab two goals a game all the time. As I said on last show, I think five, six times a season, he pops up, gets it done. It's not consistent. We'll see if they can do it against the Crew. FC Dallas hosting New York City FC, 8:30 MLS Live as well. Are we in the last rites for New York City FC? I mean, it's trickling away from them right now for sure.
It seems like they're done. And I don't, I don't think Lampard helps because he's going to come back and that midfield is going to be older and slower and struggle even more at closing down any kind of service going in the other direction.
And if you're an MLS nerd, you're super excited about the Pirlo, Lampard, maybe mix up against the Ulloas and Acostas of the world.
Yeah, I just think when you say they're going away, I think right now it's an uphill battle for all four teams in the East that aren't in the playoffs. But when you look at them, when you look at what's happening with Orlando and the potential that Kaká's now injured, when you look at the way Philly's up and down and what Chicago's struggling, I don't think any of those four teams are going to make the playoffs. But of them, I actually think New York might have the best shot. If Montreal somehow falls off, I just don't think anyone else is making a charge.
New York.
That's exciting.
Yeah. I went out on the limb a while back and I said New York would make the playoffs. Then I wondered what I was thinking when I said that. But yeah. You know, we'll see what
wasn't
happens.
Wasn't Simon calling them the Barcelona of MLS after one preseason game?
Yeah, yes, I believe 100%. So. I believe so. Yeah. But you mentioned Kaká being injured. He got hurt with Brazil. Orlando City GM Paul McDonough came out and had a little bit of he seemed upset, and it was a canned quote from the team, which is a little bit surprising on that side. Does this Kaká injury, regardless of how long it is, is that the death bell for them as well? Do they have a shot here, or is it just injuries have been too much? Because this team, they've been ravaged all
injuries
season
have
long.
Been too much, and I don't think to their discredit they've set themselves up a little bit for more long-term success than immediate success. So, right, New York's gone out and gotten DPs for the now, and Orlando's gone out and gotten some DPs for the future in Rivas and Rochez, and it's not coming good this year. Breck Shea gets hurt, and that's another guy that they were going to rely
Molino,
on.
Kevin Molino, a massive injury.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think they were going to struggle anyway, but without Kaká, I don't see much potential. By the way, I was at that Brazil game with Kaká, and the guy is just a rock star. It is amazing. And yeah. He did every single interview in this scrum, and just – his persona around the world for the league is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing stuff. Colorado, DC United, 9 p.m., 8:30 p.m., Houston, Real Salt Lake, certainly some playoff implications there. But I think the big games come late on Saturday night. I don't think there's any doubt about this. LA Galaxy, Montreal, 10:30 p.m. Eastern, MLS Live, TVA Sports in Canada. Look, it's Drogba versus the bus full of stars that LA is going to drive up to the stuff.
Is there anybody who thinks the Galaxy are scoring less than four goals against that Montreal defense?
I capped
Robbie Keane in fantasy. I wrote up a rundown and I wrote
Montreal's going to do it without thinking about the injuries on the back line.
And
no Simon,
he's suspended for this match.
Right. Is Cabrera back?
I'm not sure, but Ayango, sure. I believe, will not be there as well. So those are two of their four starting back lines. The attacking foursome will be together. Venegas will be back. So you'll have Matt, Venegas, Piatti, and Drogba, if you want to, on that team. So they could score some goals as well.
This could be 7-4, which would be great.
Yeah, it would be
beautiful. I'd like to watch that. Yeah.
Your thoughts on Drogba? I mean, obviously the hat trick kind of, it's hard to look past that. But overall.
Overall, look, he was dropping back into midfield and holding the ball up and allowing Montreal to advance as a unit in attack, which is something that none of the forwards on that team had done previously. It's classic number nine play. And I love Didier Drogba because he's always been willing to do that. We think of him as a goal scorer, but he's a workhorse. He's an absolute workhorse. He was doing that. He was turning and hitting seams. I remember one 75th minute or so, he made this really dynamic run. And I think Dili Duca just couldn't quite pick him out. But this is a guy 37 years old, and he's 75, 80 minutes into the game, and he's still trying to get off the back shoulder. For one game at least, he was everything you want and more, not just from a DP, but from a leader. Yeah. I think he's going to be great.
Yeah, we'll see what happens the rest of the way for Montreal. As we've said over and over and over, as this playoff race is heated up, they have games in hand, still just 24 played, 10 left to go, plenty of time for Didier Drogba to put his mark on this season. I think I still think that the best or the most dynamic forward in this league is Obafemi Martins. Robbie Keane, I think, is the most productive. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about that in my mind, but I think it's Oba. He'll take on will take on the San Jose Earthquakes on Saturday as well at 10:30 p.m. A tough choice for a lot of people between those two games. But Seattle doesn't do very well in San Jose. This is a big match for them, isn't it, Dave? I mean, this is from here on out, they're really sitting on the edge, and there's a lot of teams fighting down there at the bottom of the West.
We said San Jose has this easier schedule coming through, which means Seattle has to take these points because they know San Jose is going to make it up as they go along. On top of that, for Seattle, they're not a young team, so now everyone's coming back from injury, but Dempsey already, they said, left practice early this week with the hamstring. Valdez was hurt. These are guys that are going to be in and out. It's going to be tough to find consistency, and they need to get points here. Ozzie Alonso suspended with yellow cards, yep. Huge. He's the he's the one that makes that team tick. You said Annabelle Godoy back as well. So San Jose might dominate the midfield, which doesn't mean Seattle's in trouble because they're so good on the break and they're so good individually with Oba and Deuces versus whatever backline San Jose is going to put together.
Yeah, look, if you got Oba and Deuce, you have a chance every single night in this league. We mentioned Orlando. They will host Sporting Kansas City on Sunday, Soccer Sunday, 7 p.m., Fox Sports 1, Fox Deportes. The early game, Toronto FC, New England. No Giovinco, probably. You're still looking at that adductor, I would guess. But is this...
Say they believe he will play. That doesn't mean he'll start. They believe he will play. I don't know what that means.
I've heard that a lot. We'll see. I would assume that they'll be a little bit hesitant to throw him into action at this point. A lot of home games left. This is another one against New England, a rising New England squad that seemed to be hitting their stride at the right time. They did that last year. I saw an interesting stat. I can't remember where. An infographic saying New England and D.C. both have less than 25% foreign players. Toronto's gone a little bit the other way, but they're pretty good on that end. Between these two squads, Matt, looking at the playoffs, let's look down the line. Mm-hmm. Who do you think has the better shot of going far in the East?
Oh, I think it's New England because I think they know what they're about. They have a distinct and pretty effective style that they've all bought into. And Lee Wynn is rounding back into shape. Jermaine Jones will be back. And whether he's as effective as he was last year, he's still going to be a very good player. And I think one of the stories maybe we haven't done a good enough job covering is the evolution of Andrew Farrell. This is a guy who came in to the season and really struggled, I think, the first couple months playing center back. But the last 2 months, he's been a top five center back in the league. Mm-hmm. He's been absolutely fantastic. So I think I just like New England's solidity. Toronto FC, between call-ups, injuries, roster changes, they've never quite hit. I still don't know what their best lineup and formation mm-hmm. is, and it's almost October.
One of the things I love about New England when you talk about playoff run also is their depth, that they've had guys who can, Kobayashi steps in for a game or two. Fagundes is now your starter, so you have the option of Juan Agudelo and Bunbury off the bench. They have more depth than a lot of teams do in the Eastern Conference, and so that they can take a couple hits or take a midweek game and keep going.
Yeah, a lot of different dimensions to that team. Same thing for Toronto FC. Have to see how they'll do down the line. You can watch that game at 5 p.m. ESPN2, ESPN Deportes, MLS Live, or Sportsnet 360. If you're up there in Canada, do not go away. Wait out this break here. We've got Dax McCarty coming right up.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, I'm Brad Davis of the Houston Dynamo, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
All right, let's bring him on now. Dax McCarty, captain of the New York Red Bulls, captain of the second place on, games in hand, New York Red Bulls out east. At Dax McCarty on Twitter. Let's welcome him on now. Dax, how's it going, man?
It's going well, guys. It's going well. Thanks. How are you guys?
We're doing really good. Not as well as you are, though. The Red Bulls are doing great. You're the captain. You're a star here in New York, and now you're engaged. Congratulations. When did this go down? How did it go down?
Thank you so much. Yeah, well, it went down a couple weeks ago in a place in New Jersey, a really nice beach. It's called Cape May, New Jersey. Sure, some people have heard of it, but it's a cool little town that my fiance has actually had a house in for probably the past 40 years through her family. And I know it means a lot to her. It's a special place for her family, and so I figured, we had a weekend off a couple weeks back, and I figured why not go and take my chances. I figured my chances of her saying yes were better in Cape May than they were in New York City. So,
gotta go.
I went for it, and she said yes. So, thank you very much.
Yeah, gotta go with the odds there. Sounds like you didn't have a lot of questions about that, but your family's now grown to three. I have an admission, man. I definitely follow Koji, the French Bulldog, on Twitter. I definitely have now decided that I may need to get a French Bulldog. How does it feel to be the second biggest star in your family? Because this thing's getting some pub, man.
You know what? I think it was that little segment Rachel Bonetta did on Must Follows in MLS on Instagram, and I think she mentioned Koji in there. And my fiance actually was very excited about that video and told all her friends about it. And so now, Koji keeps getting requests. For media requests and interview requests, and it's certainly different. I'm used to the guy being the main man around the house, but now that Koji's kind of coming up in the world, she's probably about to pass me in followers. I get jealous at times, but then I just realize she's a dog, and I just have to kind of step back and you know, keep things in perspective. But, yeah, I would definitely recommend the French Bulldog if you want one. They're awesome. They're good city dogs. They're really fun. And then, you know, if you're feeling lazy, they can sleep all day, which is obviously nice. So highly recommended for me.
She naturally has a big head, getting a bigger one with all these awards now. She goes by the single moniker. It's just Koji. You have McCarty on the back of your jersey. I look around the league. You got Mix up in the Bronx with just Mix back there. Some other guys around with the first name. Have you ever thought about going just Dax? Or is that out of the realm for you?
I have. I have thought about going by just Dax. And I told myself that the day that I score a bicycle kick in a game in MLS is the day that I'm getting my jersey changed to Dax on the back. So until that happens, I'm not doing it. I refuse.
Have you ever attempted a bicycle kick?
Yeah, it's a good starting point. Yeah,
in an MLS game?
I have attempted a bicycle kick. In January camp, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, I attempted a bicycle kick. I connected on the bicycle kick, and I actually scored on Nick Raimondo. So that's one of my crowning moments as a soccer player. In training, we had a little 11v11 scrimmage, and I did score a bicycle kick. It was one of the crowning proudest moments of my career, because I honestly had no clue that I was able to do such a thing. So now, if I get the opportunity to do it in a game, you better believe that I'm attempting it. That's for sure.
So I got.
But I don't find myself in the box too much these days. So I need to change that.
I gotta ask, man. You're in training. Do you celebrate a goal like that? Do you just act like it's nothing? You stone face that? How do you do it?
You can see, man. You can see. I think it's on YouTube. You know,
oh.
I scored, and I wanted to make sure there was some proof. So U.S. Soccer, some of my buddies on the video staff there posted it, and I don't know if it's still up, but I really didn't celebrate. I actually think I was in a little bit of shock. I think a couple of my teammates, like, ran over. I think Teal Bunbury was there. He ran over and was like, wow, man, you scored an unbelievable goal, and I just kind of played it off like it was something I do every day. So if I did it in a game, I think I'd probably, in a real game that meant something, I think I'd probably go a little bit crazier than I did in training. But yeah, I always hold that over Nick Raimondo's head. He won't hear the end of it for me.
Yeah, I think if you do it, you got to do the Cantona. You just got to stand up, arms out, look
at
me.
That celebration is not used as much as it should be. I mean, that's a classic undervalued celebration that I think I want to bring back. I just don't score too many goals these days, as you guys know.
Well, you guys are spreading the goals around for the Red Bulls. I know Bradley's having another great year. Mike Grella, Lloyd Sam. And it seems like everybody is sort of on the same page together with this team. It feels special, a little bit different. Is this the outside perception sort of match up with what you guys are feeling in the locker room?
Absolutely. I'd say, especially in the beginning of the season, there was a lot of doubt surrounding our team. And maybe rightfully so, because of the players that we lost. But I have to give Jesse Marsh and Ali a lot of credit. I mean, they came in and they basically said right from the get-go that, you know, this is how we're going to play. This is what we're going to play. This is the type of team we're going to be all about. We're not going to be about one or two players. We're going to be about 18, 19 guys contributing throughout the season. And we're going to have a system that's going to be so tough to play against that it's not really going to matter, you know, what players we have injured, what players we have away on international duty. We're going to be able to mix and match and plug guys into a system. And because of the effectiveness of that system, it's really not going to matter who's on the field for us. Obviously, it helps if you have talented players on the field. And I think that while we did lose a lot of talent in certain guys, we also picked a lot of talent up. And we got younger. I mean, the way we play is obvious. You know, we don't change for anyone. On the road, we play the same. At home, we play the same. And I think we're capable of doing that because Jesse's made us believe that we're good enough to pull off a system like that. But also because we have fresh legs and we're a lot younger than we used to be. I mean, we used to be one of the older teams in the league, and now I think we're one of the younger teams in the league. And those little tweaks here and there make a big difference. So yeah, the belief in our group is really high. We're a really confident bunch right now, and we feel like we can play with anyone in the league. So we're going to try to keep our feet grounded and not get too confident, but we're ready for anyone.
I kind of have this theory, Dex, that in MLS, perhaps more so, or definitely more so than some of the other leagues around the world, that some of this locker room chemistry really matters. There's such long road trips, the season's crazy, all the different seasons, plus just the difficulty with the parity and the salary cap and all those sorts of things. I look at your team, I you know – I think most people that follow this game are active on social media. I see you guys on there all the time. It seems like there's a lot of outside the field, not just on the field camaraderie. Does that matter? Am I off here thinking that that's one of the important factors of having a good team in MLS?
No, you're not off at all. And I'll, you know, I can't go based on, you know, experiences with other teams, but one of the most successful teams that I've ever been on, and I think could be argued one of the most successful teams in MLS history, was that 2010 FC Dallas team that I was on. I mean, I think we only lost something like 4 games all season, and we drew a lot of games, but we also were a very good team, and that team was so close off the field. I mean, we were together probably 18, 19 guys deep whenever we went out to dinner, whenever we hung out, when we went to movies, when we went to the mall, whatever it was. We really enjoyed spending time together off the field, and the sense that I get, especially amongst this group this year, is that we have that same vibe going in our team. We have a lot of guys that, you know, are really easygoing personalities off the field. We have a lot of funny guys. We have a good group in general. And I'd say the word that I'd use is unselfish. I mean, we have just a really unselfish group of guys that I think when you try to commit to something that's bigger than yourself, it feels good. And there's certainly a sense of camaraderie amongst this group that I haven't had in a while. So that's a credit to the coaching staff and the guys that they brought in. That's a credit to the leaders that have been in this team for a couple years now, guys like Luis Robles, Bradley, Lloyd Sam. You know, guys that have really experienced the highs and the lows of all this league has to offer. I certainly don't think you're off base in saying that teams that are close off the field, certainly it shows on the field.
One of the guys who isn't back this year, Thierry Henry, obviously probably not able to just go out and have a drink in a lot of places and not be swarmed and mobbed. But at the same time, it doesn't feel like the page has been completely turned from last season. It still feels like there's a bit of a legacy from Thierry on this team. Is that off the mark?
No, that's not off the mark at all. I mean, I think you have to, you know, you can't be successful and you can't get to where you want to go as a team without respecting your history and respecting your past and the great players that have come before you. So there is certainly still a hint of Thierry on this team, and I think one of the things that I'll say was just the effect that he had on me and how I try to be a captain. I mean, I tried to learn a lot from him, and one of the things that is a staple of our team this year is the competition in training and the competitive nature that training is. That's something that we've tried to create, and that's something that I'm sure if you ask anyone about Thierry, they'll tell you the same thing. I mean, he's the most competitive guy I've ever met, and it didn't matter if it was a game of tag or a game of a finishing exercise or literally anything you can think of, an argument about the NBA or the NFL, whatever it was. I mean, he was so competitive in everything that he did that, you know, that wore off on me a lot. And I think that made me a better player because in training, you know, if you train easy and you don't train like it's like you're going to play in the games, then I think that shows. But I think with this team, the amount of competition for places right now, the depth that we have, how hard training is. I was just telling you guys a little bit before we started recording, I mean, how competitive and how hard training has been the past couple of days. And I think that shows on the field. When you train as hard as you play, you know, that goes a long way. And so I certainly think that in that aspect, Thierry is still very much, you know, his legacy is still living on. But with that being said, you have to kind of balance it, right? Like you never want to look to the past too much because this team deserves so much credit for the way that we were able to move on from losing such a dynamic and unbelievable player. In my opinion, you know, he'll go down as one of the top 10 to 15 greatest players to ever live at this point right now. And the things that he accomplished, losing a player like that is so difficult. But at the same time, with the guys that we've brought in and the system that we've tried to instill, I know that he would be proud of the stuff that we're accomplishing right now, and I think that we just can't get too far ahead of ourselves. We still, as a team, we have goals that we haven't accomplished, and we certainly feel like we can take this thing further.
A lot yet to accomplish for the Red Bulls. Still got the Supporters Shield and the Sides Playoffs, MLS Cup. It goes down the line here for this team. You mentioned Thierry, and obviously I'm sure he's watching from afar, but I can't help but lick my lips at like the alternative reality where he's on this team and he's part of these three wins against NYCFC, because that feels like the vintage Thierry moments, you know, and you guys had plenty of them, you know, the missed home run swings by Felipe Miazga, all that stuff. I know you've talked about within the team, especially around this game against DC, that they're still the number one rival. But come on, sweeping the blue side of NYCFC in the first year, that is just, that's perfection, right? What's the best moment here? When you look back at these three games, what are you going to think about 5-6 years down the line?
I think that you're right. It was perfect. I think that we looked at the games, and listen, all the chatter is great for the fans, for the media. We looked at it as a big game, and we looked at it as a very important game, especially with the way that the fans were going back and forth and trying to establish, oh, New York Red or New York Blue, whatever it may be. You never want the new guys on the block to come in and kind of steal your thunder. You never want them to take over the city that you're in. So for me, it was important that we won at least two of the games, and we respect them. We know that they have a lot of great players. We know that they are an expansion team, and it's not been the easiest season for them, but we knew that we were going to get the best version of them that they can give, because it's a big game and they want to win every time they play against us. So I'd say the biggest moment that I'll remember is the second half, the entire second half when we played them at Yankee Stadium. The second 45 minutes, I mean, it was just a truly unbelievable performance from top to bottom from us. And I think to be able to celebrate on Yankee Stadium, the first game that we played in front of, I don't know how many, 55, 60,000 people, however many it was, with our fans up in the furthest part of the field away. They tried to get rid of them, put them in the furthest part of the stadium. And we could hear them the entire second half, and celebrating with them after the game was something I'll never forget.
The iconic moment for me was, of course, the slide tackle on Pirlo, which kind of resonated for a lot of people. Going in to a game like that, and you're playing against one of the legends of world soccer, and then you come out on the other side and you've outplayed him. And I know you've done it before. You played against David Beckham. You're going to be playing against Steven Gerrard at some point. Is there a part of you that says, you know what, it's my responsibility to show the 14-year-old, the 16-year-old, the 18-year-old American kids out there that no matter who you're facing, you never go into a game intimidated, and you make sure you come out. Go ahead.
Absolutely. There's not a question in my mind that that's extremely important. I mean, I think the moment that you give your opponent, no matter who it is, the moment you give them too much respect is the moment that they're going to take advantage of you, and they're going to show you exactly why they're one of the best players in the world. So when you play against these big teams or big players, NYCFC, LA Galaxy, Seattle Sounders, I mean, we respect the abilities that these guys have and the capabilities that they have to hurt you if you give them, the time and space that they enjoy playing with. And I think especially with a guy like Pirlo, a guy that plays my position and a guy that I've admired for a really long time, the only way you're going to be successful is if you go in and you almost say, okay, like, let's take the last name off the jerseys. Like, let's try to just, say this guy is one of their draft picks and he's in here and he's trying to outplay me. And so that's kind of how you have to look at every single game, and especially against a guy like that. I mean, that was a big challenge for our team and a big challenge for me personally, as well as our whole central midfield. I mean, when you play against a guy like that, he can kill you if you're not tuned in the entire game. So that was a huge win for us. I mean, like you said, I played against really big players before, but Pirlo was a special one because of the things he's accomplished and how respected he is in the world game. So, that was a huge, huge moment for us when we played against Lampard and Pirlo, and we were able to get the best of them. Obviously, those guys are some of the best players to ever lace up the boots. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from them at any moment, but I just think that the competitive will that we showed, the desire to win, the fan support that we had, it all made for just kind of a perfect moment, I think that these guys, they're going to do really special things in our league. I really do. I just think it takes a little bit of time to adjust to MLS and get your feet under you, so to speak. So I'm sure the next time that we play against them, they'll be much better, and they'll be just as ready to play against us. But yeah, being able to say that, MLS is able to recruit guys like Pirlo, guys like Lampard and Steven Gerrard, maybe it's not, in their best moment. Maybe they're a little bit on the downside of their career, but these are still guys that have played against the best players in the world for a long time now. So I'd say it's a big, big positive sign for MLS.
I think, you know, if you're looking for a quick selling item for the new Dax website or whenever you get your, you know, your personal brand going here, the photo of you making the all ball sign with Pirlo signed, Red Bulls fans, MLS nerds like myself, that's going to fly off the shelves, man. I realize you live in the West Village. Do you ever get banter from NYCFC fans? Like, I see them all around the city now, just like I see Red Bulls fans.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think it's awesome because the amount of jerseys that I've seen just in my 5 years here around the city, it's like quadrupled. And I think NYCFC isn't great for the Red Bulls. And now, you know, NYCFC fans, I think they mainly like to give me a lot of banter on Twitter and you know, make sure that I know their feelings and thoughts. I posted that picture on Twitter of Pirlo and me, and I was just having fun, you know. I wasn't trying to disrespect anyone, and I think people took it a little too serious. But that's the beauty of social media and the beauty of soccer and sports is you just get so many different opinions and you get so much passion, and I love it. You know, that's one of the main reasons why I love social media is because you just, you know, sometimes you can speak your mind, and other times, you know, you get people speaking their mind right back at you. So I'd say mainly Red Bull fans come up to me in the city, whether it's, you know, just, hey, man, great game, or, hey, the team's doing well this year. It's funny, you know, I'm the only redhead playing in New York these days, so it's easy to spot me, and I love it. I mean, I really enjoy when people come and say hi. It shows how our game is growing, and I take the PATH train a lot, and so I'll see a lot of people commuting back and forth, and, you know, it's always enjoyable when you get people coming up to you and acknowledging the work that your team has done this year. I mean, it's a great feeling. So, like I said, we're not getting ahead of ourselves. Our ultimate goal is to win the MLS Cup, and so hopefully we'll be able to do that this year.
You've become sort of an adopted son of the metro area, we'll call it. One of the big headline makers for you guys this year is a native son, and that'd be Matt Miazga, who has just absolutely blossomed this year. Tell us a little bit about working with him and what he brings to the table as a central defender.
Yeah, Matt's a good guy. I really enjoy playing with Matt. I think that the amount of development that I've seen from his first steps on Red Bull Arena on Red Bull Arena or the Red Bull training facility to now is just night and day. And even with that being said, he still has so much further to come. And that's the beauty of a young guy that gets a lot of games. That's the beauty of a homegrown player and the beauty of a kid that grew up in this area. You know, you can just see that the tools are there. The potential is there. The everything that you need to be a top player is certainly there. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. He still has a long way to go. I think that our system and the way that we play has actually been extremely beneficial for him because it makes the game easier for him. I think if we played a different way, you know, he'd find himself, our center backs would find themselves in more situations where they were one-on-one or more situations where, you know, tactically we're a little out of balance and teams can unbalance us a little bit more. I think by the way we play, it makes everyone on the field's job a little bit easier. I mean, I look better. The forwards look better, Sasha looks better, our outside backs look better when everyone knows exactly what our job is and what we have to do. It makes our team defending so good. But with that being said, when there have been breakdowns, I mean, you can see Matt's athleticism is definitely at a top level. His size, his strength, his speed, all very good. And I think each game he's gotten a little better at reading the game. And the one thing that I'll say is that, you know, when he starts to realize that every game he needs to be the most dominant player on the field, you know, that's when he'll really take his game to the next level. And so it's all about confidence with young guys. And you can see this year, last year you could see he lost confidence a little bit whenever he made a mistake that led to a goal or whenever our team didn't play well, you know, you could see that affected him and that lost confidence. I think now by, you know, the way he's been playing and the way that our team plays, I think it just gives him confidence. And so when you can be on a defense that gets shutouts against David Villa and Sebastian Giovinco, these types of players, I mean, it's always great for center backs because then in their minds they're thinking, okay, now we got a shutout against some of the best attackers in the league. We can do it against anyone. So Matt's got a bright future ahead of him. I just, you know, we try to tell him to stay grounded and to stay humble. And if he does that, you know, I think he can go far.
Now, he took a different path than you did to the pros. He signed a professional contract, a homegrown player there for the Red Bulls. You went to North Carolina, did that, and came to MLS. I'm not, you know, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves here. Dax, I'm throwing you in a hypothetical situation, so don't read into this too much. You've got a kid that's 16, 17 years old. He's got a serious professional future ahead of him. But he's also, you know, obviously got high interest from college coaches as well. What kind of advice would you give him? What route would you tell him to take?
Well, it's a great question, and I think it all depends on the family and the kid, honestly. I think that for me, when I'll take my situation. When I was growing up and when I was in the residency program on the under-17 national team, my only goal and my only thought in my head was, you know, I want to be a professional soccer player, so what's the environment that's going to make me the best player I can possibly be? And for some people, that's going to be their thought. For other people, school is going to be of high priority to them. I think Jordan Morris is a great case. I mean, clearly a really talented kid, probably has offers to turn pro from a lot of different places, but you can see that his family and himself, you know, he values the education and he values school, which is the beauty of the American way and the American sport landscape. I mean, who knows if he would be even better if he was in an academy or a professional right now. I mean, there's just no way to know, but for me, the thing that was in my head was, you know, I wasn't always the biggest fan of school, and my parents always stressed how important it was, but my goal was to turn pro and try to be the best player I can be, and I knew in my head if I turned pro earlier and got into a professional environment earlier, that would help me become a better player. So for me, that was the right path, was to leave school early and do that. You know, so my advice for players would just be follow your heart. Listen to the people that you trust, because good players, when they're young, you have so many different people trying to take advantage of you. You have so many people that think they know what's best for you. The only thing you can do is listen to the people you really trust, listen to their advice, and then follow your heart. Because honestly, at the end of the day, you're the only one that really knows what you want. So if you want to turn pro, if you want to say that being in a professional environment at a young age, 16, 17 years old, even if you're probably not going to play as many games, if that's better for you, then do that. If you still value an education and your parents want you to go to college and you still think you can go to a high-level school, you know, do that. Because college is, I think we've seen through the MLS draft that college is still a great way to find good pros. And there's been plenty of guys that have come up through the draft that have turned into really good players and actually national team players. So there's no right or wrong answer here. I just think it's whatever the individual kid, you know, whatever is best for him, he just needs to follow his heart and follow that path.
Let's forget the hypothetical, then get you out of here, Dax. If I'm not mistaken, your contract is up at the end of this season. You're one of the first guys that are going to fall under that new CBA, mechanism, where you essentially become a free agent. You've got 28 years to your life, and you've got at least 8 years here in MLS. Where are you at with that? Are you talking to Red Bulls? Is it an extension in the work? I mean, I'm sure that's what Red Bulls fans want to hear. How do you approach something like this?
Yeah, I you know what's funny about that is I made this known at the town hall because there was a little tweet from a mutual friend of ours. I won't name names. That kind of stirred the pot up a little bit. It got some people riled up. But I actually have another year left on my contract. It's the club's option. So I'm actually not out of contract at the end of this year. I'll be out of contract at the end of next year. So what I try to do is, and this is what I said to everyone at the town hall, and not be too cliched, but you know, I don't think I'm doing myself any favors, and I'm certainly not doing the fans any favors if I'm thinking about contracts and money and where I'm going to be in a couple years, because I'm not going to be playing my best if I'm sitting there thinking, well, do they value me? Do they not value me? Do I want to stay? Do I want to go? It doesn't make sense for me to think about that right now, because I do have another year left on my deal. So we've had discussions for sure. I know that New York really values me, and I know that they want to keep me here. So I think that for me, the best thing to do is just leave all that stuff with my agents, let them handle whatever they need to do. I mean, that's why we pay agents, you know, to deal with all those awkward moments where you just don't really know where you stand. But I think for now, I'm really happy, and I'm happy with the way the team is playing. I'm happy with my situation in New York. In the off season, you guys know as well as I do that this league is just crazy, and you just really can't ever prepare for what's going to happen. I mean, a little example of that is, I mean, I went to DC United. They made me captain when I was like 23 years old, and I was like told I was going to be a building block for the future. And then 4 months later, I'm shipped off to New York. So these are just things that you just can't predict, and you just never know what's going to happen in a player's career. So, like I said, I'll try to take everything as it comes. I do have another year left on my deal, so I'll leave that stuff with the agents, and hopefully we'll see what the future holds. But I'm happy for now in New York, and I hope, you know, my main goal is just to not focus on that and focus on winning MLS Cup, because these fans deserve it.
There you go. Fans are going to be breathing a sigh of relief after hearing that from Dax McCarty. You can catch him on Friday night, Viernes de Football, on Unimas, New York Red Bulls against the Chicago Fire, 7 p.m. Eastern. Dax, once again, thanks for joining us, man. Big congrats on all the developments there in your personal life as well as on the field, man. Good luck going forward.
Thanks a lot, guys. Always a pleasure.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, this is Graham Zusi of Sporting Kansas City, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Back here on Extra Time Radio with the guys, David Goss, Matt the Armchair Analyst. I am Andrew Wiebe, finishing out here on SiriusXM and MLSsoccer.com. Some good stuff in the mailbag, but first, the U.S. 4, Brazil 1. I got that completely backwards. Brazil 4, the U.S. 1. How could I have mixed that up? Because that game was tough to watch. If you're a U.S. national team fan, that was tough. I know it's a friendly, I know blah, 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 but there was a lot of experimentation. And I thought these two games, Peru, Brazil, I thought it was all about preparing for Mexico.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what you take into that other than what not to do.
Yeah, we didn't prepare for anything as far as I'm concerned. We played Michael Bradley as a number 10, you know, in the pseudo Trey Cuartista role. And it's like, what's the point of playing him there when you're going to play Clint Dempsey there next month? Why can we not at least take a look at a guy like Wynn or Failhaber or Kleshtin, who are all playing that role professionally and doing really well with it? It's just a bummer, you know, to borrow Klinsmann-ism.
Yeah, I was going to say, well done.
Like, this, watching this team right now is a freaking bummer.
And what's sad, what's hard is there was a good second half against Peru, and rather than continue that, he starts a new center back pairing, completely new. He's, you know, he makes changes across the midfield, like you said. And so there's no continuity from one game to the next. There's no, oh, you know, you're feeling kind of strong with what you have at maybe Brooks Alvarado even. Yeah. And then you go with a Roscoe Fiscal, who I'm done with. I'm sorry, I'm done. It's enough with that one specific player.
It's just crazy that, like, any progress you make, you don't build upon it by giving them another game and another chance to improve. And by the way, two more muscle injuries in this camp. Brooks missed the Brazil game with a hamstring, and Aaron Johansson had one earlier, which is why he had reduced minutes.
Have we mentioned the Ali Bedoya at the six?
Yeah.
I mean, I just can't fathom that one. I mean, to me, a coach's job is to put the resources he has at hand, and I know Jurgen Klinsmann can say we're just not ready for it on that sense, but you put him in the best position to succeed, and that's what I think he did in some cases in the World Cup, but then it feels like he's gone away. You know, you see Beisler for a snapshot.
Yep.
This is the guy you played every single game at the World Cup. What happened in that intermittent time? I'm not sure I understand where things are going. I don't know if that's a communication issue, or maybe I'm just ignorant. Maybe I'm not on the
same level. Said, you know? I mean, we don't understand the game well enough. Americans.
Yeah.
We're a bunch of dullards, I guess.
And, you know, Omar and Beisler did get pulled apart by Belgium. So that was the last time he saw them. Now, I do believe – well, I think John Anthony Brooks actually is the best center back on the team. So I think it's great to find someone to pair with him. But that is, I think, what Jurgen came off of and said, can I find something to move forward?
But even that freaking Belgium game, first of all, Omar and Beisler both played that game hurt. And they played that game with no Kyle Beckerman in front of them. Beckerman had been the best U.S. player for the first three games. So he changed – like, what do you expect against a good team? They're going to take advantage of the gaps and the guys who can't run. It's just insane.
So while the U.S. was playing Brazil, obviously a world-class opponent, so was Mexico. They took on Argentina later in the night on Tuesday. A 2-2 draw. Argentina had to come back in this game. They scored two late goals, as you expect them to do. Lionel Messi with the game-tying goal. Sergio Aguero making it 2-1. What do we see from this October 10th game? This is the big daddy. This is the one. This is the CONCACAF Cup. This is for Confederations Cup berth. It's for bragging rights. It's to, for Jurgen Klinsmann, take some of this building pressure off himself. What are the odds they win this game? What are the odds they go into that Confederations Cup?
Well, I think they go into this game as underdogs, for sure. Mexico
in LA in front of
100,000 people. Yeah,
I think they were always almost going to go in as underdogs, coming off Mexico winning the Gold Cup. No matter what happened,
I mean that's fair.
And it's not like a coaching change is some big, you know, oh my God for Mexico. it happens for them. This is just part of the environment. Yeah,
but I mean, I don't know what to expect from the U.S. I think the most worrying thing was that against Brazil, we didn't show any fight. And that was one thing you could always count on from the U.S. national team, no matter who the coach was, no matter what the stakes were. This team was going to go out there and run themselves into the ground. And Jermaine Jones didn't do it. Michael Bradley, who's like a robot, didn't do it. Jose Altidor didn't do it. None of the defenders did it. It was like that is the, like, oh, God, there is something seriously wrong. Not just on the field, but in the locker room.
Another month to figure things out. They won't do it on the field. The warm-up games are complete, so they'll hit the training field before Mexico. We'll see what happens. That's going to be a massive game. I believe the preliminary rosters are due this week from CONCACAF and U.S. Soccer, so look out for that. We'll have an idea maybe who will be on the field for that game. Let's move on to some of your mail. Tom McHugh, we asked for random MLS sightings. I'm now going to open that up domestically because he has a good one. He was working at a toy store. He says, I believe in New Jersey. He's now in New York City as a freelance musician, which is a cool fact. Congrats, Tom. But he's working. He's doing his thing. And he sees a random customer talking to a woman about Barbie Power Wheels cars. He approaches them, as any good employee does. Hey, can I help you? What's up? And then he's like, you know what? You look exactly like Bradley Wright Phillips. And Bradley Wright Phillips says, hi, I'm Bradley. Nice to meet you. This is my fiance. He says he's forgotten her name. a lot of fiances on the Red Bulls, huh? Yeah, this is just a recurring
Well, Bradley got
theme.
Married. That's why Sean Wright Phillips is on the team.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good point. Anyway, he gets a picture. Turns out Bradley was blinking in the picture. We tweeted that one out. Pretty good stuff. The good note from this, Bradley asked about Call of Duty and pre-ordering, but then said, you know what, I shouldn't. I've got to concentrate on the rest of the season before I buy it. So
he knew he was a fan once he took the selfie, and that's why Bradley's trying to cover
up. Right. He's like, oh, no, but I don't need that yet. Not just yet. And finally here from Scott Donovan, who went to Malta to search for signs of Simon Borg. Actually, he says he went to visit a friend, but he did ask around about Simon. Nobody knows who he is. That's unfortunate, but maybe not unexpected.
They're just not willing to admit it, I think.
Yeah. So anyway, he had a bunch of pretty interesting experiences down there. He did not meet Jesmyn. He says he looked for Jesmyn, did not find him. Didn't find the puddle that kid was pushed into long ago. But he did have some interesting experiences. He had some guys fighting over him on a tourist trip to different vendors. He said that reminded him of Simon. They were a little bit frightening and very, very loud. That's very Simon-esque. So thank you to Scott Donovan. Thank you for Tom McHugh for sharing your stories. Scott's a Union fan in Chicago. I assume we got some Union Oyos stuff over there, right? You don't know? Maybe we'll find something for you, Scott. Same thing for you, Tom. We'll send something out. We'll shoot you some emails. Big thanks to you guys for joining us here on this show today. Matt, the Armchair Analyst, Doyle, Dave Goss, and thanks to Dax McCarty. We always enjoy him. He's one of our favorites. Listen in next week. Matt Polster, an exclusive with him that you won't want to miss, plus more MLS commentary. We'll be back then.